Chapter 4 Teens and a Pickle. In March 1225, 2 years before his death, Genghis Khan sat down to breakfast to dine on a bowl of warm hearts cut from the chests of his enemies. At that time, he was ruler of the largest empire in the history of the world. He reached up, scratched his nose, and said something extremely profound.
Zarim da en ajil shal mea baina.
He knew what he was talking about. As do I. Trust me, I've been a king before. No, really, I have. Sometime check out Volume 4 of my autobiography, page 139. I was only king of one city, really, and only for a short time. But it was ridiculously, insanely, bombastically tough to do the job right. Tougher than trying to get hit in the head with a baseball shot out of a cannon. Tougher than trying to climb a 100-foot cliff using a rope made of used dental floss. Tougher even than trying to figure out where my stupid metaphors come from. I've never understood one thing. Why do all of these megalomaniac dictators, secret societies, mad scientists, and totalitarian aliens want to rule the world? I mean, really? Don't they know what a pain in the neck it is to be in charge? People are always making unreasonable demands of kings. Please save us from the invading Vandal hordes. Please make sure we have proper sanitation to prevent the spread of disease. Please stop beheading your wives so often. It's ruining the rugs. Being a king is like getting your driver's license. It sounds really cool, but when you finally get your license, you realize that all it really means is that your parents can now make you drive your brothers and sisters to soccer practice. Like Genghis Khan said, Zarim da en ajil shal mea baina. Or translated, sometimes this job sucks. But really, hasn't everyone said that at some point?
Zarim da en ajil shal mea baina,
Bastille said from way up high. What was that? I called up. I don't speak Mongolian.
I said sometimes my job really sucks.
You're doing great.
That doesn't mean that this doesn't suck,
Bastille called. You see, at this point, Bastille was balanced atop a set of stilts, which were in turn taped to another set of stilts, which were in turn taped to another set of stilts. Those were on top of a chair, which was on top of a table. And all of that was balanced on top of the Mokian University Science Building. It was a large, island bungalow-style structure. You know, the kind of place you'd expect to find Jimmy Buffett singing, Warren Buffett vacationing, or a pulled pork buffet being served.
Do you see anything?
I called up to her.
My entire life flashing before my eyes?
Besides that,
it's really easy to see who's balding from up here.
Bastille, I said, annoyed.
Sorry, she called down. I'm just trying to distract myself from my impending death.
You weren't so nervous when I suggested this.
I was on the ground then.
I raised an eyebrow. I hadn't realized that Bastille was scared of heights. She hadn't acted like this before. Of course, other times she'd been up high, she'd been in a flying vehicle, not strapped to three sets of stilts and balancing high in the air. For all her complaining, she was doing a remarkable job. And she had been the one to suggest taping the stilts together to get her up higher. Besides, she was wearing her glass-weave jacket, which would save her if she did fall. Her Kristen abilities allowed her to keep her balance, despite the height and the instability of her position. It was rather remarkable. Of course, that didn't stop me from wanting to tease her.
You aren't feeling dizzy, are you? You aren't helping.
Man, I think the breeze is picking up.
Shut up!
Is that an earthquake?
I'm going to kill you slowly when I get down from here. I'll do it with a hairpin. I'll go for your heart by way of your foot.
I smiled. I shouldn't have taunted her. The situation was dire, and there was little cause for laughter in Tuki-Tuki. The dome was cracking even further, and my counselors, the two kind of useful ones at least, said they thought it would last only another 15 minutes or so. But seeing Bastille in a situation like she was, where she was uncomfortable and nervous, was very rare. Well, I had to do it. And that, by the way, is the definition of stupid or lifeless. Being so stupid as to taunt Bastille while she's out of arm's reach, assuming she won't get revenge very soon after. As I smirked, Kaz rounded the building and trotted up to me, wearing his dark warrior's lenses. He'd gotten two small pistols somewhere and wore them strapped to his chest. They looked like flint and powder models, perhaps taken from the Mokian stores.
"Everything's ready," he said. "Mokians all over the city are climbing atop buildings, looking for the first sign of librarian holes opening."
He glanced up at Bastille.
"I see you found a way to get even higher," he called at her.
"Reason number 56½. Short people know when to stay on the ground. We're closer to it. We appreciate it more. What is it with you tall people in extreme heights?"
"Kaz, I'm a 13-year-old girl," Bastille called down. "I'm only, like, a couple of inches taller than you are."
"It's the principle of the thing," he called back.
Then he looked to me.
"So, are you going to explain this plan of yours, kid?"
"Well, we've got two problems. The rocks hitting the shield and the tunnels digging up. We can't stop the rocks because there's an army between us and the robots, but the librarians are conveniently digging tunnels from their back lines up into our city. So one of the problems presents a solution to the other."
"Ah," Kaz said thoughtfully. "So those fellows..."
He nodded to the six Mokian runners Aluki had gotten for me. They stood in a line, ready to dash away, bearing backpacks filled with stuffed bears. I nodded. "Usually, after the librarians are fought off from the hole they dig, the Mokians collapse the tunnel. But this time, as soon as the hole is spotted, we'll move everyone out of the area. The emptiness will make the librarians think that they haven't been spotted, and they'll rush out to cause mayhem. These six men will then sneak down the tunnel and run out behind Mokian lines, then take down the robots. A single one of these bears to the leg should make the robot collapse."
"Wow," Kaz said. "That's actually a good plan."
"You sound surprised." Kaz shrugged.
"You're Smedri, kid. Half our ideas are insane. The other half are insane but brilliant at the same time. Deciding which is which can be trouble sometimes."
"I'll tell you how to decide," Bastille called down. "Look and see which one involves me having to climb up 100 feet in the air and balance on stilts, shattering Smedri's."
"How can she even hear us from up there?" Kaz muttered.
"I have very good ears," Bastille called.
"Here," I said, picking up a backpack. "I made one of these for each of us, too. There are two of each kind of bear in there. I figured we should all have some, just in case." Kaz nodded, throwing on his backpack. I shrugged mine on as well.
"You realize," Kaz said softly, "that the soldiers you send out to stop those robots won't be coming back."
"What? They could run back in the tunnel and..." And I trailed off, realizing how stupid it sounded. The librarians might get surprised by my tricky plan. Might. But they'd never let the Mokian soldiers escape back into the tunnel after destroying the robots. Even if all of this worked out exactly as I wanted, those six men and women weren't returning. At best, they'd get captured. Maybe knocked out by librarian coma bullets. I hadn't even considered this. Perhaps because I didn't want to. Go back and read the beginning of this chapter. Maybe now you'll start to understand what I was saying. I glanced at the six soldiers. Their faces were grim but determined. They carried their backpacks over their shoulders, and each held a spear. They were younger soldiers, 4 men and 2 women, who Aluki had said were their fastest runners. I could see from their eyes that they understood. As I regarded them, they nodded to me one at a time. They were ready to sacrifice for Mokia. They had seen what my request would demand of them, even if I hadn't. Suddenly, I felt very stupid or lifeless. "I should cancel the plan," I said suddenly. "We can think of something else."
"Something that doesn't risk the lives of your soldiers?"
Kaz said.
Kid, we're at war.
I didn't want to be the one responsible for them going into danger, but there was nothing to be done about it. I sighed, sitting down. Kaz joined me.
So now, he said.
Now we wait, I guess. I glanced upward nervously. The rocks continued to fall. The glass's cracks glowed faintly, making the dark night sky look like it was alight with lightning. 15 minutes. If the librarians didn't burrow in during the next 15 minutes, the dome would shatter and the librarian armies would rush in. Most of the Mokians, the ones I didn't have watching for tunnels, were already gathered on the wall, anticipating the attack. I blinked, realizing for the first time how tired I was. It was well after 11 at this point, and the excitement of everything had kept me going. Now, I just had to wait. In many ways, that seemed like the worst thing imaginable. Waiting. Thinking. Worrying. Isn't it odd how waiting can be both boring and nerve-wracking at the same time? Must have something to do with quantum physics. A question occurred to me, something I'd been wondering for a while. Kaz seemed the perfect person to ask. I shook off some of my tiredness. Kaz, I said, has any of the research you've done indicated that the Talents might be... alive? What? Kaz said, surprised. I wasn't sure how to explain. Back in Nalhalla, when we'd been in the Royal Archives, not a library, my talent had done some odd things. At one point, it had seemed to reach out of me, like it was alive. It had stopped my cousin Folsom from accidentally using his own talent against me. I'm not sure what I mean, I said lamely.
We've done a lot of research on talents, Kaz said, drawing his little circle diagram in the dirt, the one that divided up different talents into types and power ranges. But we don't really know much.
The Smedri line is the royal line of Inkarna, I said, an ancient race of people who mysteriously vanished.
They didn't vanish, Kaz said. They destroyed themselves somehow, until only our line remained. We lost the ability to read their language.
The forgotten language, I said. We didn't forget it. Alcatraz the First broke it. The entire language, so that people couldn't read it. Why?
I don't know, Kaz said. The Inkarna were the first to get talents.
They brought them down into themselves somehow, I said, thinking back to the words of Alcatraz the First, which I discovered in his tomb in the Library of Alexandria. It was like...
Kaz, I think what they were trying to do was create people who could mimic the power of oculatory lenses, only without having to use the lenses.
Kaz frowned.
What makes you say that?
My tongue moving while breath moves out of my lungs and through my throat, vibrating my vocal cords and...
I meant, Kaz said. Why do you think that the talents are like lenses?
Oh, right. Well, a lot of the talents do similar things to lenses. Like Australia's talent and disguiser's lenses. I did some reading on it while I was in Nalhalla. There are a lot of similarities. Shatterer's lenses can break other glass if you look at it. That's kind of like my talent. And then there are traveler's lenses, which can push a person from one point to another and ignore obstructions in between. That's kind of like what you do. I wonder if there are lenses that work like Grandpa's power, slowing things or making them late.
There are, Kaz said thoughtfully. Educator's lenses. When you put them on, it slows time.
That's an odd name.
Not really. Have you ever known anything that can slow down time like a boring class at school?
Good point, I said.
All in all, there were thousands of different kinds of glass that had been identified. A lot of them, like the traveler's lenses, were impractical to use. They were either too dangerous, took too much energy to work,
or were so rare that complete lenses of them were nearly impossible to forge. "Sunglass is called technology," I said, "but that's just because it can be powered by bright sand. But all glass can be powered by oculators. I've done it before."
"I know," Cass said. "The boots. You said you were able to give them an extra jolt of power."
"I did it again," I said, "with transporter's glass in Nalhalla."
"Curious," Cass said. "But Al, nobody else can do that. What makes you think this involves the Incarna?"
"Well, neurons in my brain transmit an electrochemical signal to one another, and..."
"I mean,"
Kaz interrupted,
"why do you think this has something to do with the Incarna?"
"Because," I said, "I just have a feeling about it. Partially Alcatraz the First's writings, partially instinct. The Incarna knew about all these kinds of glass, but they wanted more. They wanted to have these powers innate inside of people. And so somehow, they made it happen. They gave us talents. They turned us into lenses, kind of." I frowned. "Maybe it's not the fact that I'm an oculator that lets me power glass. Maybe it's the fact that I'm an oculator and a smedri. That's much rarer, isn't it?"
"I only know of four who are both," Kaz said. "You, Pop, your father, and Australia."
"Has any research been done into people like us powering glass?"
"Not that I know of," he confessed.
"I'm right, Kaz," I said. "I can feel it. The Incarna did something to themselves, something that ended with the creation of the Smedri talents." Kaz nodded slowly. "Aren't you going to ask me what makes me feel this way?"
"Wasn't planning on it."
"'Cause I've got this really great comment prepared on unconscious mind interacting with a conscious mind and releasing chemical indicators in the form of hormones that influence an emotional response."
"Glad I didn't ask then," Kaz noted.
"Ah, well. Now, it may seem odd to you that I, a boy of merely 13 years, figured out all that stuff about the Incarna, when scholars had been trying for centuries to discover it. I had some advantages, though. First, I had the unusual position of being a smedri, an oculator, and a holder of the breaking talent. From what I can determine, there hadn't been someone who had possessed all three for thousands of years. I might have been the only one other than Alcatraz the First. Because of that unusual combination, I'd done some strange things. You've seen me do some of them in these books. I'd seen things others hadn't, and that had led me to conclusions they couldn't have made. Beyond that, I'd read what many of the other scholars, like Kaz, had written. That's part of what I'd spent my time doing in Nalhalla while I waited for the fourth book to start. There's a saying in the Hushlands, if I have seen further, it is only by standing on the shoulders of giants. Newton said it first. I'm not sure how he got hit on the head with an apple while standing up so high in the air, but the quote is quite good. I had all of their research. I had my own knowledge. Between it all, I happened to figure out the right answer. Kaz nodded to himself, slowly.
I think you might be onto something, kid. Some scholars have noticed the connection between types of smedri talents and types of glass. They've even tried to put the glasses onto the incarnate wheel. But your explanation goes a step further.
He tapped the diagram he'd drawn on the floor.
I like it. Things tend to make sense once you've figured out all of the pieces. We call smedri talents magic, but I've never liked that word. They work according to their own rules. Take Aedes' power, for instance.
It seems pretty magical, I admitted, creating 5,000 bears out of thin air.
She didn't create them out of nothing, Kaz said. She's got a spatial talent, one that changes how things are in space with relation to other things. Like my talent. I get lost. This moves me from one place to another. Your father loses things, not himself. He can tuck something into his pocket, and it will be gone the next moment. But when he really needs it, he'll find it in the pocket of a completely different outfit.
80s talent is actually very similar to these. Those bears, they didn't come from nowhere. She moved them from someplace. Out of a storehouse or factory. Perhaps she drained the armory back in Nalhalla. That's how it always works. She's not magically making them appear. She's moving them here, and she's putting something back in their place. Usually just empty air.
Like transporter's glass, I said.
Yes, actually, Kaz said. Now that you mention it, that is very similar.
He tapped the ground again.
So if I get you right, you're saying that the Incarna turned people into lenses, but something went wrong.
Right, I said. That's why the talents are hard to control, why they do such odd things some of the time.
And that's what your father is chasing, I warrant, Kaz said. Didn't he say he wanted to give every person Smedri talents?
Yeah, I said. He announced it in a big press conference to all of Nalhalla.
He wants the secret, Kaz said.
And my mother does too, I guessed. It's hidden in the forgotten language. The trick, the method the Incarna used to turn people into lenses.
Kind of. And this whole issue with the translator's glass was based on that, Kaz said, growing excited. Your mother and he were searching for this same secret, and they knew they needed to be able to read the forgotten language to find it, so they searched out the sands of Rashid, and broke up because of differences in how they'd use the abilities once they found them, I said, glancing toward the university building proper, where my mother was locked up.
I have to talk to her. Interrogate her. Maybe I can figure out if this is all correct.
Above us, Bastille began to swear. I looked up. Bastille was pointing urgently.
Alcatraz! The earth is moving in a yard 3 streets over. I think librarians are tunneling in over there.
Kaz leaped to his feet, and the 6 Mokian runners came alert. I glanced at the university, the place of my mother's impromptu prison. An interrogation would have to wait.
Let's go,
I said, dashing in the direction Bastille had pointed.